Downloads of this show are available on Podomatic.com and the Podomatic mobile app.
Hey, it's time for Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit. And I'm Dr. Lisa. I am so jumping out of my chair. I am so like over the moon, thrilled to be here. First of all, I had to take a few weeks off because I had this art exhibition that took the there's so many metaphors that I could say, but anyway, I have a really bad cold and a fever now. That's how it wound up. It was a lot, and I had to rebroadcast some of my favorite shows, which was fun, but not as good as being here. And one of the things that I'm really, really excited to tell you about, besides the fact that I want to thank you for listening to Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit, is that we are having this kick-ass benefit tonight at the Well for Radio Free Brooklyn. And we have, there's three bands playing: Jackknife Stiletto, Red Arcade, and Nuclear Family Fantasy. The tickets are $10. The doors are 8 p.m. and it's 272 Meserol Street. If you haven't been to the Well, the Well is cool. I mean, it's really actually an excellent, excellent place to be seeing music. Great venue. And we are going to start doing these. Radio Free Brooklyn's going to start doing these showcases first Thursday. But this is our holiday showcase and fundraiser. It's a big fucking event. Okay, you guys, get out of your asses and your basements and just get out there and you might enjoy some live music. And I think we should give a special shout out to Matt Townsend, A, for setting up this interview that I'm going to tell you about in a minute, and Rob Pritchard, because they really take the reins on the Radio Free Brooklyn, our live music showcases. So here's the deal. This is who my guest is today, okay? It's Mossy Ross, who is the lead singer, songwriter, even though it's like really hard rock, I mean, is that, I don't know, is that the correct term? Songwriter, bass player, drummer of the Nuclear Family Fantasy. And she is right fucking in front of me. I can see her right now. She's kind of laughing because I'm sort of making fun of her. Thank you, Matt. You know, thank you for setting this up. This is awesome. So I'm going to have this chance to talk to her. We're all going to get to know her together, and then we can go see her play tonight, perform. So, and I'm going to ask her like what it's like if she's nervous about performing. She doesn't seem like it, but you never know. I'm going to find out. Okay, I'm going to grill her and find out. You know, I'm Dr. Lisa. That's what we do here. But before we get started doing that, I want you to understand how fabulous and wonderful her music is. And also, if you go to my Instagram, I put a great video of the song she's about to put on the air for us. So, Mossy, say hi.
Hello.
Thanks for being here. And tell us what song you're going to put on the... What song first?
Everybody Loves You When They're Drunk.
Okay.
Well, you've been working hard, but you ain't been getting. Can't even get laid. and now you go home, tired of another day, but you can't stay in bed, now when you got so much to say, just gotta get out, to get out, couldn't stay awake, can't go to sleep, so you get out of bed and head down the street, you get on your soapbox as you take your seat, cause this is where
That is killer. Wow. That's amazing. I mean, that's like incredible. It's wow. I don't know. It's magic to me. Really. It really, really is. So you know what I'm talking about. This chick is so badass. Let's really get to know her. How are you feeling?
Feeling very good. Thank you for having me here.
Oh, yeah. How are you feeling about playing tonight?
I'm excited. I'm a little nervous. I'm actually we're going to be dressing in costume tonight, so I'm wearing some pretty high heels.
Oh, really? Is that hard to perform in high heels?
I don't know. I've never done it.
Oh, wow.
That's what I'm most nervous about, I think.
Do you know the other bands and stuff?
I've heard them. I don't know them personally yet.
So is that part of the fun?
Yeah.
Like, I'm just picturing, like, being backstage, the other band has a lot of chicks, and then the Red Arcade are kind of the opposite of chicks. The Rastafarian types.
Yeah, they are.
It's
gonna
be good weed back there. I'm thinking.
Yeah,
that's immediately. That's where my mind goes. So, but you're having the people. I mean, you guys play out, and you've done this album. You did this album together, which is awesome. Mm-hmm. So you know, those are your friends, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So how long have you been playing with this band?
I started writing the music for this about a year and a half ago, and then I recorded drums and bass for it over the summer, and then I kind of gathered Will on guitar. And he filled in everything really great. And then I just got our newest drummer, Gary. He's been working out really well.
So. Oh, great.
Yeah.
Great. And you said you live here in Brooklyn, right?
Brooklyn, uh-huh.
Williamsburg.
Uh-huh.
And So Mossy Ross sounds like a stage name, right?
Yes.
So we're going to have an honest, we're going to have a very direct conversation here. What's your real name?
Jules.
Yeah. I love that name.
Thank you.
It does it not sound like a stage name, or what is it?
I started going by Mossy because I was a teacher and I didn't want my students to find me on social media, so I had to use a nickname of mine. So that was the one.
And you got used to it?
Yeah, I like it. It's Mossy came from a mushroom trip and realizing how much I love moss. I like lay on it and just imagine all these little worlds in it. So Mossy, and my last name is Ross, so kind of rhymes, and it just became a nickname of mine.
So did you tell your students that when you?
No,
they don't have any clue.
No,
but because they don't know how to find you on social media, that's why they don't know.
I hope not.
So do you still teach?
No, I quit almost 10 years ago.
Oh.
Yeah, I did it for about 5 years.
What did you teach?
I taught 6th grade in Coney Island for 3 years, and I taught 2nd grade in Brooklyn Heights.
Oh, how was that?
It was great. I definitely preferred the junior high school kids. They get my sarcasm, and the young kids do not.
That's funny.
The hard way, so.
That's funny.
Yeah.
So you said you moved here from Florida in 2003.
Mm-hmm.
So how did you happen to move up here?
It was my lifelong dream. I came from a really small town in Florida and saw Muppets Take Manhattan when I was about 2, I guess. that was where I was headed. I didn't know how I got here. That was where I was going. So
Muppets Take Manhattan was a big influence on you. I don't think anyone has ever said that that's been in here. That's so interesting.
Such a great movie.
Well, you know, I'm glad they had some good influence. I'm glad they had like some influence and not just like mamby-pamby things.
They've brought us
great rock music. Yeah. I like that. That's really good. So the next question we have to get past, even though it's obvious, is like, how did you get into music?
Well, I played piano most of my life, just taking lessons and kind of doing that as a hobby. And then about 12 years ago, I went for a massage from a massage therapist that had been highly recommended. And he had a band as well, and he was looking for a keyboard player. So I started playing keys very badly in that band and kind of whet my appetite for playing music as something other than a hobby, but to perform it. And I started playing drums and just picked that up and realized that it really took to it. So I started playing drums with that band, and then that's why I quit teaching, just to gigging and teaching didn't really go very well together. So,
Yeah, I guess not. It would be really hard.
Yeah.
And now you're in a band, and I think you bartend sometimes.
Mm-hmm. That's what I do for money.
How is that?
It's great.
Yeah.
It's also inspired a lot of songs.
I bet. Can you tell us where you bartend?
I bartend at South Fourth Bar in Williamsburg, and I bartend at Rosemary's Greenpoint Tavern.
Oh, nice.
On Bedford and North 7th, which is, like, I think the oldest bar in the neighborhood.
Oh, wow. Much better with the quote-unquote rock and roll lifestyle.
Yes.
Yeah. Are most of your friends, are you involved in, the whole band thing? Is that your...
No, it kind of varies. A lot of my close friends are actually women I knew from teaching.
Oh, nice.
And different artists and some musicians, yeah.
So it's not all music.
No. I have some normal friends.
You have some normal friends. You're not like going out every night, all night.
Oh God, no.
No.
I never did that really. I mean, I know I miss out on a lot of good times, but I'm more of an early bird.
Oh.
Which is very un-rock and roll, but.
Well, in order to get to where you are, you've done obviously the hard work in that you're the person writing the songs and, you know, the front person. I mean, it's a lot of hard grunt. There's grunt work involved in discipline, right?
Yeah, I think that's probably something that goes very unrecognized. Is a 3-minute song could take months, for at least for me, to create. And you have to go through a lot of weed and whiskey to do that as well.
Yeah, so it's really hard work. And then getting your music out there.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if you were really out all night, every night, like that's not going to happen.
No, it won't.
Unless you have, unless you happen to be like the drummer with a real, like your drummer could do that.
Yeah.
Right? Because he's got you doing all the work.
Well, yeah. I also think that the way it used to be when there was, you know, CBGBs and some of the other more locally minded music venues that have closed down in the last couple of years, there was a scene. So going out might have actually been beneficial. You would meet a lot of other people, but that kind of went by the wayside, and now it's just like expensive restaurants, and that's
Interesting. So musicians don't hang out as much as they used to.
I don't think so. If they do, I'm out of the loop.
Oh, interesting. But that kind of makes sense, though.
Yeah, I mean now, well, I guess in the sense that there was like these key places that you went to,
right,
and you knew you were going to see certain people there. Not to say that, you know, for example, I think tonight. And another show we played a couple weeks ago had a really lovely community feeling to it.
Right. Yeah. This show will for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everybody should get on the Radio Free Brooklyn train because it's really about, I mean, the thing that I love about it, it's about community.
Yeah.
Like they really care.
I've noticed.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really like a group of really interesting people.
Yeah. I've noticed that.
Yeah. Wacky.
Even just this show has had a lot of kind of cross social media cross promotion with all the bands that are performing.
Yeah, no, it's a good, it's like an amazing, I mean, it's just, I mean, that is one of the things that I truly love that the station stands for.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Same.
But so you obviously have, you know, are a focus, you're focused, I think, right?
Yeah.
Did you study to be a teacher? Was that what you had imagined?
Well, I actually, believe it or not, I got my undergrad in international business.
That
was part of my New York thing. I saw myself in power suits, you know.
Wow.
And growing up in the 80s, that was kind of a dream for a woman to kind of invade that male-dominated world.
I could see that.
And then I realized I didn't really care about business all that much. So the Teaching Fellows program is a great program here that they offer to people that haven't majored in education but want to get their masters, and the city pays for most of it.
So that's how you came to New York?
Yeah.
You signed up for that? I know about the program. You have to be really, I mean, that's competitive.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think it's more so now after, when I did it was right shortly after 9/11 and they just really needed teachers. And so.
No, I know somebody who became a famous writer that started out that way.
Yeah. It's a great program. I went to Brooklyn College, which was a good school. I actually felt like I learned something.
And they paid for your education?
Yeah. Most
See how together these people are? You can't be a deadbeat and be a successful creative person. That's what I keep trying to tell my listeners. It's hard.
It's a constant PSA for not being a deadbeat.
Yeah, yeah. And you believe in that, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So I wanted to talk to you about how the album. So is this your first album that you've written by yourself?
Well, I do have another album for a band that I had started about 4 years ago called the New Jewel Movement, which is named after a government in Grenada that was the U.S. kind of ran over.
Screwed.
Yeah. And that was very, very politically minded music, very literally political music.
Uh-huh.
And but it's such a huge body of work that I just haven't had the money or the time to really record it.
Uh-huh.
And I hope to go back to it. Not yet. Yeah, I do hope to go back to it. The guitar player for that band, his apartment caught on fire, so he had to move back to Chicago. And it just, a lot of stuff happened. So this is the first band that I've actually gotten a proper EP out of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. and it's your music.
Mm-hmm.
yeah and you learned on your own to write music and all that? Or
I think playing in band, in the band I was playing drums for, helped me to learn how to structure a song. And but really I'm very limited.
She's just smart Lisa, just shut up. She's just smart.
I think, what's the saying, whatever, it's when, you know, when you don't have, you're lacking
necessity.
Yeah,
is
something about necessity.
Friend of creativity.
Yes,
or some bullshit like that.
We'll
look that one up. I'll have my producer find out before the end of the show.
Yeah.
Matt, are you listening? Colin, with that, with what it is.
It's important. I'm very limited with what I can do, especially on bass, because I don't really play bass. I just write on bass. And so, I think to say you are a bass player means you could just pick it up and jam, and I can't do that. I just, I write on it. So there's not a lot of fancy changes or chord structures or anything like that. It's just what I, you know, what
right,
I do. So,
right.
But it also, it's my thing, that being said. It's the way I write, and it's not the right. way somebody that's more advanced writes, but
sure.
That's them.
Sure, it's yours. Yeah, that's how it works for you. I think we're all, like, the people that, if you learn to do something by instinct, I always think you're going to be better off than if you learn it through a book.
I agree.
Or combine them, but right. still.
Right.
So how did this album come about? How did you get started writing this album? How did it come about?
Just heartbreak.
Okay, so, you know, and I'm not going to pretend anymore. Like, this is really, something really, like, fucked up happened, right?
Yeah.
Can I just come out and say that? Is that okay?
That's okay, yeah.
Okay, so, but I don't really, you know, we're going to talk about it because but I just want to say that, like, no matter whatever happened, like, you're a great example of creative humanity because you made something fucking awesome.
Well, thank you.
So, you know, like, this is I'm inspired. I think my listeners are going to be inspired, and, you know, thanks for sharing.
Well, thank you.
Well, yeah. So what happened?
I'd been through a really rough breakup when I started writing the first song for it, which was Done, the second song on the EP. And then my boyfriend at the time had been struggling with depression and addiction and maybe some other, I don't really know. But he was trying to get sober.
I'm sorry, I just want to be clear. So you had broken up with him, or is this a different boyfriend?
No, this is the
boyfriend you'd broken up with, but you were still probably friendly, and he had gone through a lot of really fucked up shit.
Yeah.
Was he a musician as well?
Yes, he is. He has had an incredible band called The Every Others.
Mm-hmm.
And they are just, mm-hmm. they are my favorite, one of my favorite bands.
And
of
did
all
you
time.
Meet him by going to see his
yeah,
band?
Yeah, I was a groupie for about 8 years.
And where did they play?
They played Max's. What's the? A lot of these places
Max's
aren't even
Kansas
around anymore.
City?
Yeah.
Oh, so he must have been a bit older than you.
Yeah,
like at least
about 10, 11 years older.
Yeah.
They toured. They went to England. I mean, they were on their way in the late 90s, and then the late 90s happened with music, and it just kind of all went to shit. They started promoting more like pop stars and sort of sterile, safe music, not really so much rock, you know?
Yeah.
And he had asked me to play drums for him, which was like, I couldn't believe
dream
it.
Come true.
Yeah. And then we ended up getting together, and a few years later we did break up because it just seemed like a very stressful relationship. But a few months in to our breakup, he was getting sober and things seemed to be okay. And then he was slipping again and not feeling so great emotionally. And then he just was gone one day. I went to check on him and his dog was there and he was gone. And
you mean like in his home?
Yeah.
Did you try to, like, you hadn't heard from him? Was it like that kind of thing?
No, I'd seen him a few days before and he was very, very depressed, and mm-hmm. I'd never seen him that way before.
And was he usually, using then too?
I don't know if
maybe.
He was using at all. I knew he had a drinking problem,
right.
But I don't know anything. Yeah, I don't know what else.
Right.
But I just know he was very depressed. So I gave him, you know, I'd given him a little bit of space, and then I went to check on him because I hadn't heard from him, and he was gone. And so it was, it was just traumatizing because I didn't know if he had committed suicide or what had happened. And his family and I filled out a missing persons report and finally got subpoenas to get his bank accounts. And he had flown to San Francisco, which he had spoken about doing a few days before. He'd just been wanting to see the Redwoods and get out of New York, which I think is a very difficult city to get sober in if you're trying to do that.
Yeah.
Know? And especially in the music world. But so the only thing I really know is that he had gone to San Francisco. I moved in because I was sleeping on a friend's couch at the time in Hell's Kitchen. After we had broken up, I'd moved out.
Mm-hmm.
So I moved back in to take care of his dog, who I love. And I got some mail a month or two into my living there that was addressed to him from someone he had met at a hostel in California.
Mm-hmm.
And I ended up getting in touch with this person. It was an elderly woman who dropped him off in the Redwoods
And that's about a week after he went missing. He just, with a small bottle of Jack Daniels, went into the Redwoods, and that's all we know of him. So, yeah.
And was it one of those things where the police and everything, buddy, went, there was a big search for him?
Yeah, I mean, his drummer went out there to look for him. His sister went out to look for him. It was sort of my second job for a little while to call Rangers and everyone out there that I could think of. And his ex-girlfriend, who's a wonderful woman, did a GoFundMe to hire a private investigator, but nothing has turned up, which is, as my 86-year-old boss, Rosemary, said, no news is good news. So, and bad news travels fast and all those cliches. So hopefully he found some peace there. And
but that's really hard to live with because it's unresolved.
Yeah.
And most people probably can't even understand how difficult that is to live with.
Yeah. It was hard.
It is hard.
It was harder when I was drinking to get through it, to cope, because I couldn't afford therapy, and I just had a lot of guilt because I felt, you know, what could I have done differently?
Sure.
And then again, 6 months later, one of my best friends passed away as well due to alcoholism. And so, and that was also kind of on my watch. I was supposed to bring her to the hospital for detox the next day after I got off work, and I didn't. She wasn't answering her phone. And then I finally called an ambulance to go check on her, and she had passed. And so just was dealing with so much guilt and feeling like, and a lot of really bad anxiety, which I hadn't really felt before. And alcohol is truly an immediate painkiller in that way, and a socially acceptable one, for better or worse.
That's truth.
Yeah. So it was, it's been a lot of work to just not depend on that the way I was. And, and you can hear that in this album, because Matt actually said that we started a drinking game. If every time I mentioned alcohol in this album, we could get pretty drunk.
And you're a bartender.
Yeah. So,
yeah. Wow. So that's really impossible. That's really hard. Mm-hmm. Really, 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 really hard. Have you talked to a therapist, a real therapist?
No, I haven't, just because, finances.
It's expensive. Yeah. I always tell people, like, CMPS, I can give you the number, I should have it on hand, but I don't, has a really good, it's a Center for Modern Psychotherapy. I've gone there, and they have a really good program for, you know, sliding scale or something. Mm-hmm. Have you gone to any other, there must be like groups of people that have gone through or in your situation to some degree?
I'm sure there are, unfortunately, group. I just don't honestly want it. I don't know. I don't know how much I want to relive it, or or like hear
other people.
Kind of, yeah. I just kind
that's
of
probably not,
that
probably not for you. Right.
I sort of have in my own mind what he's doing, and it keeps me positive and going, you know, because he is resourceful. And I do think if something very terrible had happened, we would have known about it.
Right.
Didn't go into the Redwoods with a stockpile of booze and drugs. He went with a small bottle of Jack Daniels, which to me says he wasn't going out there to commit. Maybe he originally was going out there to hurt himself, but I think once he got there, maybe he sort of saw a different way.
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely, he went into the Redwoods. It's not like he went into like, it's not like he took a plane to like a really desolate place or a horrible country, or, you know, he didn't go to like Syria or something. Like, going to the Redwoods seems like a healing thing, kind of, right?
Yeah. And he really loves nature. And I see that
being
probably the best place for him, or rather than
here.
I mean,
that seems very like So, how has creating this album, like, what was the process of how do you relate that experience to the album? Like, what did that, it's obviously helping you. It's helping you, is it?
Oh, yeah. It helps me.
So can you talk about that? Like, what happened, how you managed to funnel all that into the music and the writing, and then how it's affected you?
Well, one thing, my neighbor, downstairs neighbor, was the last person to see him in New York. And the night before he took off, he'd been very upset and saying that all he wanted was to take care of me and his dog, Blaze. And he really did do that by leaving this apartment because I didn't have my own space. And so you really need your own space to create. And so, and it's an affordable place. So I was able to afford to record and things because of this apartment. And he really did do what he wanted in that regard. So I just would come home, and part of it, I hated myself for what had happened and for almost feeling like I'd allowed it to happen, and writing or playing music and having something that you can call your own really helps you to feel somehow better about yourself, you know? And so a lot of the songs did start off kind of literally about him, and then they sort of transitioned to being kind of about me. I mean, the last one on the album is called So Many Maybes Ago, and it's about basically like, did you commit suicide, or what did you do, you know? But it's also about kind of being a flake due to depression and alcoholism, because Owen and I found that I would do this over the last year as well, just wouldn't show up for things, wouldn't do things because I couldn't trust myself to either not drink too much, or I had already been drinking and I didn't want to go out, you know, I just wanted to be with myself. And so I hope that by these songs being about him and then me as well, that I know I'm not the only person that goes through this sort of thing with not necessarily with this kind of scenario, but what's going on personally in people's lives or politically, we do tend to go towards pills and alcohol other forms of illegal drugs to cope with it, you know? And I don't think it's really, especially with drinking, I don't think it's the severity of that is really discussed enough because it is socially acceptable and it's a social activity. And as a bartender, I see how many people come in and use alcohol as a way of burying their pain or avoiding going home to loneliness or, you know, coping.
Yeah. So do you feel like people don't open up enough about what's really on their minds, or it's kind of interesting because it's sort of like there's two ways to think about it. Like on one hand, you know, society, I mean, I have this is my issue with society, that it's so fucked up that, you know, everybody has to pretend everything's great all the time. And then we all think that everybody else is doing great. Mm-hmm. But the other thing is alcohol, we think alcohol is a party. Mm-hmm. And like, what do you think the percentage of, I think there's a huge percentage, right? An unrecognized percentage of people that use alcohol in a destructive way. Is that unrecognized, do you think? As a bartender, what do you see?
I do think so. Because and there's all kinds of factors that play into that. I mean, I serve people who I think are doing that, and I have to because I need to make a living.
Of course.
And in my head, it's like, well, at least I care about them. I'm not just, you know, some random person giving them drugs, you know?
Yeah, you're...
But I think to what you said, I think it's true that there is, there are a lot of people using it in a destructive way, but it's hidden because they're, you know, you walk into a bar, the bars that I work at in particular are bars that have regulars. Mm-hmm. So it's like a Cheers kind of setting where you walk in and everybody knows you and you feel like you've got this group of friends there. And that's what kind of prompted Everybody Loves You When They're Drunk, was that you do go to the bar at the end of a hard day of work, but it's like a temporary fix. You know, everybody loves you when they're drunk, but what about when they're not? And what about when you're not? Are you hanging out outside of the bar? Do you have a rich life outside of the bar? You know, are you doing things that are fulfilling for yourself?
I want to ask this one question. We have to play. I want to play another one of your songs while we have time. But can you tell, like, what's a telling sign to you? How do you notice that you think people are abusing alcohol? Is it just that they're there all the time, or is it what they drink or their behavior? Like, how do you think, what makes you think they're sad and using alcohol to cover? Or
I think if it's like, I feel kind of even bad. And I don't say this at all as a judgment.
No, not on this show. There is no.
Yeah, and I'm even being open about my drinking because I feel like it needs to be discussed. I'm not a special case. I'm saying this because I know that so many people are doing the same thing. And I think it's just, I see some people that okay, I'll have one more. Okay, I'll have one more. And you just know that they just do not want to go home to the aloneness or whatever. You know, they just don't want to be by themselves. And I think that's, and you know, they're there a lot. And I don't really know of them doing many things outside of work in the bar.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I can. I mean, I'm a regular at Pine Box. I talk about it on here all the time.
Yeah, there are different kinds, you know, of regulars too. I think it's like,
well, what you said is really poignant to me. That feeling that you're describing, or that I get from you, is that feeling of, I don't really want to have I'm ambivalent about this drink, but I'm even more ambivalent about going home. Mm-hmm. And just like how horrible that is, that somebody has, you know, a feeling that they don't want to go home and be alone, which mm-hmm. is perfect. Like, who wants to feel that way?
Yeah.
You know?
Totally.
Who want, like, that's so awful. And that's our society. Mm-hmm. You know, it's really unnatural. We're supposed to live in tribes.
Exactly. Not in isolation. Like,
yeah.
Too.
Yeah. So then we wind up thinking like it's, you know, like totally, it's completely understandable. And as a bartender, you see that. I mean, we all see horrible things in whatever job we have. And that's what you see a lot of.
Yeah. I mean, and I love the people that I meet, you know, and it's
right.
just, but like you said, it's like if we were living in tribes, we wouldn't need this gathering place where we go and do something that's really destructive to our bodies every day. We would be telling stories or, you know, sharing.
Or we would just be there in a secure way with each other, knowing. Yeah, right.
Yeah,
right. But I do think you must bring some, like a really positive energy to the place. And that's a contribution.
Depends on my mood.
No, but you know. That's, you know, you feel it, you pick it up. That's what shrinks pick that shit up too. I'm not a real shrink, so I don't worry about that. So I am relieved of that responsibility. I want to play another one of your songs. And so tell us about the next song.
The next one, if my phone doesn't die, is, oh, wait, it might. It's called Left Me Lonely Again, and it's the we're going to be screening that video, the new video for this song.
Oh,
tonight.
Okay. Tonight.
Yeah.
Tonight, we're going to be playing the video. That
yeah.
is so awesome. About what time do you think that you're going to be on in the video and all that? Just
around
so,
10, probably.
Around 10-ish. Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. Let's play it.
Okay, hopefully my battery will last.
Why couldn't you be someone I could rely on? Someone I could believe and decide on with my
Wow, that's beautiful. That it's your music has a real range.
Thank
it
you.
Really was, does. How does that? How did that feel? I was looking at you, and
well, I'm picturing the video now that we have it, and it's such a beautiful video. It's so sad though. Both this video and the last one I did are. It's these two women starting this new production company called 333 Productions.
Mm-hmm.
And they want to do videos and things for people on a budget. And they're incredible. I can't say enough good things about them. And so the first video was very fun. And
it was. Yeah, I saw it. It's great. Yeah,
this one is just, it's so sad. And it's really hard because I'm watching myself in this role of this like sad housewife. And it's such a dramatic kind of depiction of how I sort of feel sometimes, you know, in my own life, just kind of going through the motions, feeling this intense sadness and loneliness, you know,
mm-hmm.
and drinking to get through it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Although not as much as I was.
So, getting the music out, like how long has your EP been out?
Since, I think late July.
Oh yeah. So like seeing, like playing the music and having people appreciate the music, is that helping you?
Yeah.
Does that?
It's been, yeah.
Is that sort of like finally getting, like giving birth to a kind of healing?
Yes. Yeah.
I would like to, I want to think that, and I can't imagine that it wouldn't be like that.
Yeah.
What is it that, like? It just rewarding to see people responding to the music. Or,
yeah, it is. And I feel like it does an honor to Owen as well, who's my ex, is Owen.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's, he inspired all of this. I mean, that's how amazing of a person he is, mm-hmm. wherever he is, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I've actually written a new album in the last few months.
Wow.
That's more more about letting go.
Mm.
So it's a little more, it's not as dark, wow. I think.
So your music is really, I mean, this is like the ultimate, to me, like the ultimate use value in creativity.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you go through that and you are able to process something and heal and put it out in the world, then I think it's really like generates that for other people too. And
I hope so.
And I bet everyone that knows you sees it happening, and it probably, like, I bet that's really helpful to his family and your family too, right?
I hope so.
Has his family responded to the music?
No, I haven't been in touch with them except for right after this happened, because it's just too painful. I think for both of us, like anytime I get a message, you know, and Facebook has that stupid memories.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah, like, shoot me now.
I had one today and yesterday. It's like,
Come
on. I wish you could opt out of that, because it's really unfair.
I mean, seriously, I know it is really,
you know,
fucked up.
People go through really crappy shit, and then you have to be reminded of it on there. You're still
I know.
Day and you're like, oh, everything's going to be a good day.
No, I know, because like 3 years ago, I had, you know, the Miami Art Basel thing is on now. And like 3 years ago, I had a solo show there, and like I haven't been back since. And like it came up yesterday, and I'm like, I remember my time in Miami. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Look at all those people there. I haven't, you know, whatever.
You'll go back.
Oh, you know, whatever. It's all a journey. It's mm-hmm. all a journey. So we only have 13 minutes left, and I just want to make sure I say thank you for listening to Radio Free Brooklyn and Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit. And I'm also reminding everybody that we're having a huge benefit and tonight at the Well. It's our first RFB Thursdays, first Thursdays. And besides the Nuclear Family Fantasy, we're also there's also going to be Jack Knife Stiletto and Red Arcade. Tickets are $10. The show starts at 8. It's tonight at the Well, 272 Messerol Street. And I also want to give a shout out to another show that we're doing at the Footlight at 7 o'clock this Monday, December. Is that this Monday? No, it's a week from Monday, right?
What date?
I'm going to announce it next week. December 18th. Is yeah, that that's week. Okay, good. We got time on that because I'd rather give the time to my good friend Kaylin Sherrard, who's a really crazy and handsome young performance artist. And what he's doing is kind of weird. And he made a big point of trying to get me to talk about it, which I'm happy to do because it's wonderfully weird. So the idea, it's called, here's the hashtag, Elevate One Global. And you can go to elevateone.org if you want to find out about it. So the idea, this is so crazy what he's doing, but I kind of love it. He is trying to get everybody to do performances in elevators.
Oh, love that.
On December 12th.
That's awesome.
Don't you think?
Yeah.
Don't you think? So I think that we should all like, I definitely want to do something. I don't know. I'll have to think of it, but I kind of love that. And the hashtag is hashtag Elevate One Global. So that's ELEVATE One Global, GLOBAL. So I think that's crazy and wacky. And thank you for letting us know about that, Kellen. I'm sure there'll be a lot more people doing that on December 12th. That's next Tuesday. I know that for a fact. So isn't that weird? I love it, right?
I love it.
So... okay, we have 11 minutes. I wanted to find out a little bit about your childhood and then play one more song. Okay, let's do that. So, because here's my impression of you, okay? I'm very impressed with you, first of all. But you have, my first impression of you, she's tall and gorgeous and, like, really well-dressed folk. Not well-dressed, dressed in a very... of fashionable way that you haven't seen before. Okay. That's what I'm saying. And, so you have this, like, to me have like kind of a real rebellious side, but at the same time, now that I've gotten to know you a tiny bit, you also have like a really like focused, thoughtful, smart, organized side, right? Mm-hmm. Am I right? Is that,
yeah,
do you feel like that's who you are to a bit?
Mm-hmm.
So what was your childhood like? How did that come about?
It was, my childhood was really lovely. It was harder in my teenage years because of that rebellion.
Mm-hmm.
And in a small town, you can't rebel very easily. And so I made it, that was kind of maybe more where my focus came in handy because I just focused on getting out.
Uh-huh.
You know, and going to where I uh-huh. wanted to be, which was New York.
What did your parents do?
My mom was a housewife, and my dad is an electrical engineer. He worked for the power company.
Oh, so he had like a, you know, a decent job, and mm-hmm. you have a nice home, like a decent, stable home.
It was like, you know, growing up kind of more like, I guess, lower end of middle class, but middle mm-hmm. class, and that's kind of what we don't, that's where the name of the band came from, is like we don't have that anymore, that opportunity really to live like in a truly comfortable way that's not ostentatious, but you just have more, you have
plenty, what you need,
what you need, yeah, you know.
So did your town change where you grew up?
No, it hasn't. I think it's probably going to eventually, but
so it's still like that.
It's still, well, I mean, it's, everything's more expensive, you know, and we got a Starbucks, which means, you know, there goes the neighborhood.
Right.
Like,
it wasn't getting any attention from those kinds of corporations, but
oh, now it is.
Right. Yeah. So,
so did you have a good relationship with your parents?
Yeah. Again, it was, you know, once I became
until you became a teenager,
kind of started having my own ideas about things. It wasn't, they're very religious and very
That's a lot to rebel against. Yeah. If you are they, what are they, Christians?
Baptists, yeah.
Are they like how fervent? Like closer.
It seems like they get unfortunately more and more fervent and right wing as the world becomes more divided.
Trump voters? Mm-hmm. Oh man, you got to go home at Christmas to Trump voters. Oh, that's tough.
Yeah, it's. I look at it as more of like a research.
Yeah, I'd be curious about that.
Yeah, it is very interesting to see what the other side thinks.
How do they rationalize it?
I don't know because I don't talk about it.
Oh, all right. That's fair.
I don't even want to know. I don't feel like we've had some really bad, bad times over the years and more. Yeah. And I just.
You already have enough pain to. Why make new ones?
Well,
why make new?
For a while, we didn't speak. And I feel like I don't. Oh, that was hurtful for all of us. And I don't want to do that again.
Yeah.
I'd rather just avoid. Nothing's. They're not going to change. I'm not going to change.
Right.
So, you know, I just think. It's tragic to be so polarized, you know, so divided like we are. But I think it is kind of interesting to have this up close glance of what this other side thinks, and from people that I love. Not like usually if I see a Trump supporter, it's like fuck you, you fucking idiot. What's wrong with you? You know, like, and you sort of feel this seething rage, or I do. For them. Yeah. But like, how could you think this way? How could you approve of this guy and support him? But when it's your own family, it's like, okay. I mean, I can't think that they all suck.
Well, you know, I'm feeling, I mean, there is something reassuring sitting across from you, hearing you say it's your parents, because you're like a normal person and reasonable. And like, this is your family. They're a little less scary than what I imagine.
Yeah.
Those complete unknowns to be. Do they have guns?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the scary thing is that they're kind of the more tame side, you know, like in the sense that they are getting what they want, so they don't have to rebel or fight. So they're sort of quietly. I don't even know why they have guns. It's like, who are you?
They do have guns. Your parents have guns.
I think they have a gun. I don't even know. Again, I don't want to know. The less I know, the better, because I have a tendency where I can lose it. I can totally lose it.
Don't make it worse. Yeah. I'll make it worse for you. I'll bring it up. We'll talk about it. But you know, I like to pick at the scabs, but don't do it to yourself, for God's sakes.
Yeah.
So, do you brothers or sisters?
I have an older sister.
And how is she? Like, what's she like?
She's a teacher. She's lovely. She's such a sweetheart. Mm-hmm. She's kind of, I don't think she has she kind of likes to just keep the peace, you know.
Yeah.
She won't really say one way or another what she believes. And I don't think, and this is one thing I found when I moved here, was that you don't really know what you don't know. And I came from such an isolated town that I didn't know. I knew I didn't fit in with whatever was going on there with religion and right-wing radicalism and all that stuff. But I didn't know what else there was. And now I've, you know, just through extensive amounts of reading and talking to people and watching documentaries and stuff, now it's like, oh, okay, I get it now. And, you know, I think a lot of people, including my sister, aren't in that position to be exposed to knowing, to finding out what they don't know.
Right.
And leaving their, you know, a lot of the Trump supporters will say, you know, this is the best country in the world, but they've never left the country, you know.
Or,
and that's the same kind of mentality of not really knowing what else is out there.
So I'm guessing she still lives where you grew up.
She lives close. She lives about an hour away.
Mm-hmm. And is she religious too?
By fear, I think. Uh-huh. I hope they don't hear this interview.
I doubt it.
And this was sort of my experience, was like, just that fear of hell is real when you grow up in it.
Yeah.
And you don't know why it doesn't settle well with you or why it seems kind of off, but like, it's enough to keep you at least going to church. So she'll go to church just to say, you know, I think, and this is my belief, I don't know, honestly.
Yeah, no,
I get it. These are things I don't really want to talk about with them, but I think she's expressed to me that she doesn't necessarily enjoy
going to church.
Right.
And, you know, it's...
Well, you know, I mean, I do think that there is something, you know, religion in all societies does seem to have some positive effect on, well, A, creating community.
Yeah.
And some kind of moral compass. And, you know, I mean, I'm not a personally religious person, but I do feel like when I hear religious communities talking about, you know, treating people with respect and stuff like that, mm-hmm. I like that. You know, like my mother always said, you know, we never went to synagogue. Being a Jew, to be a good Jew is to be a good person. Mm-hmm. And that's all she would say. And I like that attitude, and I think if religion can spread that attitude, that's positive.
Oh, we need another hour to talk about how that does not happen, unfortunately.
We don't have that, but I do want people to hear the last song we have time for today, and I want you guys to show up tonight, okay? I hope I get to see you guys at the Well on 272 Meserol. So the last song for today is... For the show is
so many maybes ago. If my phone lasts that long, but thank you so much for having
me. Oh, I loved having you on. Thank you for being here. Get on. That's the end of that. Well, stay tuned because we have a great show following us. It's Elon Danziger with Lost and Rewound, and he plays stuff inspired by music tapes from his childhood and a lot of other stuff like that, and it's a really, really great show. And Elon